Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we have 115 million reasons to be cheerful in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, that's right. The saga that has overshadowed last summer appears to be over. It's taken a few twists along the way, but Moises Caicedo has become the third most expensive player of all time, and it actually costs more than it took to build the Amex. Incredible. Speaking of the Amex, we got back to playing football with Luton, our visitors, on Saturday, and we got our season off to a flying start, winning 4-1 without ever really getting out of second gear. This week, we hit the road as we head to Wolves, who have already changed their manager on the eve of the season and are having a somewhat of a fire sale. So, can we make it 2 out of 2? Joining me today as we cast an eye over the week's events is, of course, Alan Wares. And we are delighted to welcome back for the first time this season, the Argus's Brian Owen. Well, it'll be a relief to talk about football after the last week's events, Brian.
Yeah, but you're not going away. You're going to talk about transfers.
Yes.
And we can talk about football
yes,
as
I am.
Well.
But
let's talk about football as well, because I did enjoy that game. And I couldn't quite on Saturday. I know it wasn't Brighton at their best. I know it was there was a certain player was a little bit conspicuous by his absence in the way they played. But I thought it was a lot of entertainment. Underlined the attacking options, the flair that Brighton have got. Felt a bit like a cup tie against a lower division team. And I was sort of, I actually felt sorry for people when I had quick looks on Twitter, which wasn't much, who were tweeting about transfers on Saturday afternoon, because it was all about enjoying some football, as you say.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we've got to start with, let's get the Moises thing out of the way.
Oh, I'll tell you what, can we avoid it?
No, we can't.
No.
Because this is the story that's basically underpinned the whole summer.
AD? I mean, it's basically been a non-story until what, a week ago? Because apart from that, it was always on off, but only in the minds of those who are too bored not to actually go out and enjoy. Well, I say enjoy the summer. Just go out and sort of smell the roses. Because until a week ago, there wasn't a story, was there?
Well, obviously, there's been the constant bids that have been nowhere near our valuation, but 115 million pounds. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I think it's a record sale for Brighton and for Independiente del Valle for the sell-on that they get. It is. I think a lot of these transfers are mind-boggling. I mean, to me, 4 million was mind-boggling the numbers. You can't really get your heads around them. But it's the, I suppose, for the amount of games that he's played, which isn't so many, whatever the percentage is that he's gone up, it is absolutely incredible. But I think Brighton have played it pretty well, haven't they? They changed they gave him the new contract after the January window. And I think there was a lot being said. I've read on Twitter, you know, it's been another dramatic day, and it hasn't, because there hasn't really been that much going on. There's been just waiting for the occasional bids to come in, and then it all kicked off with 111 million on Friday, the early hours.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, that offer was one which we accepted from Liverpool, and I think most of us were absolutely, well, I wouldn't say delighted, because I didn't really want to lose the player, but we were happier with him going to Liverpool than going to Chelsea, I think. So for the fact that it turned around, and I know that that the club had been speaking to Liverpool for a couple of days, it wasn't just this so-called deadline, which never existed, apparently. It had been something that had been going on for some time.
Yeah, I thought it was quite strange how Jurgen Klopp reacted to the fee being agreed. And at the time, it seemed quite weird on how he sort of didn't really want to talk about it. And I suppose with hindsight, maybe he knew that it was a long way from being over the line. But it's on the records with Paul Barber saying how well Liverpool handled themselves, conducted themselves, how professional they were. And like you say, we all thought that was it then, but then a little bit of unease at the Brighton end started to creep in as sort of Friday went on into Saturday, we were told at the game on Saturday that nothing had changed, which it hadn't in concrete terms, in terms of bids or a deal being struck. It was checked upon at the press conference with De Zerbi after the match, and again confirmed nothing has changed. But obviously things were on the way to changing over the weekend. I think by Sunday, I had a deadline at 8 p.m. on Sunday, and so the story that I wrote was that Chelsea were leading the race. So to, I think that was the wording, and it looked like it was going to happen. And then it was obviously quite late Sunday, wasn't it?
I mean, there was talk that he'd already agreed personal terms with Chelsea, but I mean, how can he do that if he hadn't been allowed to speak to the club?
Well, there is this consideration, and I've heard it from other people around in football, that the player himself can't speak to other clubs, but there is nothing to stop. There is no rule in place to stop people, officially or unofficially, on behalf of that player, speaking to other clubs. I think, again, it's one of those rules that either UEFA or FIFA has to catch up with in order to stop this nonsense happening. But someone on behalf of player X, you know, I mean, it could be, you know, in theory, AD, you could go up to, I don't know, Worthing and say, I've got this player who wants to play for you and he's under contract, and there's nothing that, you know, anyone can do about that. So I think that it's not the player themselves. They can't have direct contact with the player themselves. Mm. But, you know, someone who just so happens to be having lunch at such and such a place, you know, there's nothing that could be sort of stopped, really.
Yeah. Now Brian, you mentioned Independiente del Valle. Now, obviously, they've done very well out of this transaction, and to the point where they're actually going to build a centre named after Moises. But, I mean, have you spoken to the South American press about it?
No, not at all. Well, apart from when the announcement was coming out, I just alerted the radio station I go on sometimes that it was coming out, because they were a bit surprised how far down the line it had gone. I know they spoke to him, didn't they, when he was over there in the summer, and there was one interview which was an answer he gave was very much misinterpreted about how he couldn't say no to Chelsea, which was sort of not really correct in terms of how the question was asked. But no, it's something I'm thinking of getting on with. But it's, what is it now? 8 o'clock. I know this isn't live, so I've got a few hours to do that yet. They're a bit behind us. Anyway, I've been in touch with Argentina instead.
Well, we'll touch on that in a little bit.
just a WhatsApp that came through. It'll be out there now, won't it?
Yeah, you might be bark coming up the wrong tree there, Brian. But we'll see. But Al, I mean, you speak to the guys at the Anfield Wrap a lot. I mean, they obviously thought they had the player. Has there been any fallout from that?
Well, I don't think so. Weirdly enough, I was on there twice. They have several shows on there, but one was a special to, I think, when David Ornstein broke the news that Liverpool and Brighton have agreed the figure that they have after what was supposed to be, let's say, a deadline transfer auction, or, you know, bidding auction, whatever it might have been. And of course, they're very, very excited. They've seen him play before. You know, linking up with the McAllister would have been just absolute dynamite for them, because Liverpool have been screaming out from midfield. They were very excited by the whole idea of it. And then I got a message on Monday morning, would you like to come on? And I just said, yeah, fine, no, sure, no problem. You know, 3 days is a long time in football. And I think that they thought I was talking about, because what they specifically wanted to talk to me about was talking about the Luton game. And barely mentioned, well, didn't consider mentioning Caicedo at all until I said, well, actually, that's what I meant. Because let's face it, everyone else wants to talk about it. They themselves understand what's happened. I mean, they're actually kind of a little bit slighted, not so much anything other than the fact that, you know, after a deal was struck, or after, you know, electronic hands were shaken, for want of a better term, the fella just turned around and said, no, I don't want to go there, it's Chelsea or nothing.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a snub to just about everyone. And their attitude was, well, as soon as he's actually sort of considered a sloppy seconds, they didn't really want to know. The worst of it we've seen is mostly on social media by people saying, oh, Brighton have actually just gone and reneged on a deal and gone behind our backs and dealt with Chelsea. And of course, it hasn't worked that way. It didn't work that way.
Yeah. But it does seem odd that he didn't even speak to them. Or rather, his agents didn't even speak to Liverpool.
Yeah. I mean, we could leave that question hanging. We can guess as to why, but let's face it, that's when Reverb can't afford its lawyers. So, we have to be a little bit careful. And I think we'll leave that to the mutterings over a couple of pints at the pub.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm going back to this transfer fee, Brian. I mean, that 115 million will buy you the team that we put out on the pitch on Saturday twice plus some change.
Really hadn't worked it out in those sort of terms. I think the thing is, it's a good fee if it's used well, isn't it? And so far from what we've seen, they will use it well. It's a bit of a different. Well, I asked Deserby in his press conference, somebody has said, how do you do it? You've lost McAllister, you've lost Caicedo, and now you've got Daoud, who looks so good in midfield, and he's a free agent. And obviously Deserby said, well, yeah, but he's not a Caicedo type. So I then said, in my question was basically, are we going to see a different Brighton, or do you need a Caicedo type? And he said, yes, we do need a Caicedo type. And the story went on our back page. So he said that they need that. And then it's, I suppose, reinvesting that fee, isn't it? And where it's interesting is, presumably it's not one of those where you buy the replacement 2 years ahead. Caicedo was a replacement for Bissouma, but he was brought in advance. So this is more a sort of a, how do you replace Cucurella, or how do you replace Graham Potter? Yeah. It's that sort of having to replace it now rather than ahead of time, unless there's somebody out there who...
Yeah. I mean, and we've often said on this show, when we've been speaking to other outlets, that, you know, the next cab's normally in the rank already.
Do you think that actually, therefore, we've peaked with Caicedo? I mean, let's face it, when you sell someone for 115 million, there's not too many times when you can pick up the next 120 million pounds worth of player for 5 million and turn them into it. I mean, let's face it, even like I say, as Brian pointed out, Caicedo was for a while a work in progress. You know, we bought him, sent him out on loan. He played with the kids for a while. Sorry, he played alongside the kids for a while. Let's phrase that properly. And let's face it, he didn't make his debut until the last eight games of the previous season. So, well,
as we said last week, Al, it was that sliding doors moment of losing Jakob Moda that gave him that opportunity.
Was in the game at Arsenal that we won 2-1.
Yes, yeah. So Moda picked up his injury in the game before against Norwich, and Caicedo came in when we had a six-man midfield, but at least that's what it looked like on the team sheet.
I think that was one of those times when Graham Potter then realised that actually he could and should have bloodied Caicedo a little bit earlier. And there's an interesting point. He left him out on the bench. He left him in the stiffs for a long time. And when you see the nature of the talent, it's not to blame Graham Potter, because he eventually did bring him on. And he did. He was one of those that nurtured him. Well, it was bought under his managerial stint. So you can actually give Potter a lot of credit for bringing him on. But I think he himself did actually acknowledge that, he said, I probably left him out in the cold for a bit too long.
He sort of said that jokingly. When I've heard him say that in press conference, oh, I should have brought him a bit quicker, shouldn't I? Almost like he said, I've been in the emergency meeting at crisis meeting at Chelsea. I got the impression the fact that he was willing to joke like that suggested he had the confidence that he hadn't left him too long. Mm. It was a sort of a self-deprecating comment that you can make when you're actually confident you did the right thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I think also, anyway. Yeah, but I mean, I think also that when it got to the end of last season, the Albion did recognise themselves that, you know, this was in the wake of us pulling our pants, Chelsea's pants down over Cucurella, that the club did realise that Moyes was going to be the next one off the rank to go for silly money. Now, I don't know if there's any talk about who the next one might be. I think Ferguson Lineker seems to be touting Evan Ferguson to Spurs. That's not going to happen just yet. But, I mean, I can't help feeling that if De Zerbi is after a Caicedo clone in terms of the way, that's going to be a tricky one to find, and probably just as rare as finding that elusive striker that we've been screaming out for.
If there is, then we probably haven't heard of him. And there's lots of talk, Brian, about Carlos Baleba. That obviously
seems more like a Bissouma type, perhaps. I know there's not that much difference. And obviously he's got the Lille connection. I spoke to a scout who operates for... around France, but for clubs in the north of France, and who sort of thought that at his age, this boy was ahead of where Basuma was. So we'll see. Yeah. I mean,
I know Adam Burgo rates him very highly, and he covers French football.
Yeah, he would
a
have
lot.
Seen him, wouldn't he? Because he did the Lille game on Friday night. Although I don't know that that he played that well on Friday when it drew at Nice. But the Zerbi also said in January that about the left-sided centre-back, and I know there was almost seen as certain that he would be bringing in this left-sided centre-back, and it didn't happen. So doesn't what he particularly maybe say in a press conference and wants doesn't necessarily always happen. But I did think even in the ultimately convincing 4-1 win against Luton, I saw at times that, and I love the way Daoud played, by the way. I really enjoyed that. And I'll probably end up with like 14 players on the pitch. But they did look like they needed that fulcrum, that pillar, especially against maybe other teams better than Luton.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll come on to that in a minute, and we'll talk about the Luton game. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. And as ever, in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has given us a rather splendid shirt to have a look at. Brian, what do you reckon to this?
Tell you what, mate, splendid is pushing it.
Is it actually a professional team?
Yes, it is.
More like a sort of where it. Well, that surprises me. Let's. Okay.
It hasn't made you want to go out for a Big Mac, has it?
No, it hasn't. Is it? Yeah. So you want some description? It's blue. Sort of. Is that like a royal blue? A white Lotto pattern across the shoulders, and it's made by Lotto. And then somebody has ironed on a big red patch on the front, which says McDonald's, and has got what are normally golden arches, but on this case they're white arches.
I'm not convinced, actually, that McDonald's thing has anything to do with anything. I think that's Phil's photoshopping, personally.
No.
Oh, is it? That's not his...
I think it might
that's
be.
That's not a sponsor.
No, there is... I think I haven't actually looked at the shirt on oldfootballshirts.com, but I suspect he has photoshopped something that is actually on that sponsor logo, which is massive, by the way.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, what I can see is there's a kind of a... the club badge is just sort of peeking through in a. For those who understand Photoshop, it's multiply rather than normal. For those who don't do Photoshop, you have no idea what I'm about. I'm not going to explain it, but you can vaguely see a kind of a watermark of a badge, which appears to be is kind of angular shield shape with diagonal stripes on it, and looks like I don't know, a stag's head or anything like that. Like I say, splendid is pushing it. There's shades of Preston Park about this kit. it's minging, in my opinion.
I could see this is sort of Jurgen Klopp would have worn as a player. I could see it being like a German second division or a Austrian or something.
In which case, going along with what Brian said, I'm going to say about 1992. But if you're going to then sort of get excited by the fact that he said Austrian. And Phil always does an away shirt. So let's go for Wacker Innsbruck 1992.
Well, it's this is what Phil has got to say about this particular jersey. It is the 2007 to 2008 home shirt.
No.
Of Austrian Bundesliga side RZ Pellet WAC. That's an unusual name for sponsorship reasons. The full name is Riegler Zeitmeister Pellets Wolfsberger Athletic Club, and the traditional name of the side is Wolfsberger AC. Generally, the team is referred to as WAC or VAC. They were originally formed in 1931, and they play at the 7,300 capacity Lavantal Arena. Not content with having a name based around a sponsor, if you go back to 2007 when this shirt of the week was in use, they were called WAC St. Andra, and they entered into cooperation with a local lower league side, SK St. Andra, and the cooperation was ended in 2012, the season that VAC gained promotion to the Bundesliga for the very first time. VAC have competed in the Europa League three times, making it to the group stage in 2019-20 and in 2020-21, where they made it to the knockout stage, only to find Spurs being non-Spursy, losing 8-1 to them on aggregate. Last season, they lost in the qualifying round of the Europa Conference League. There's not much that links back to the UK, but what he did find is a link to the Albion. Our new number three, Igor Julio, made 15 Bundesliga appearances for VAC in 2018, whilst on loan from Red Bull Salzburg. So thanks for that, Phil. Of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. Now, Al, something is happening on the weekend of the 15th, 16th and 17th of September.
Yes, we're away at Manchester United.
Yes, this is true, true. Okay. What else is happening?
Okay, well, back in Brighton, Radio Reverb is a community radio station which relies on sponsorship donations and grants, not advertising, to keep its the meter running. So we can't always necessarily hit our targets. So with that in mind, we're going to be having an annual Reverbathon. We know it's a lot to ask of everyone. You probably just come back from your summer holidays, having spent an absolute fortune in sunning yourself in Basingstoke. But if you can spare a few shekels on the weekend of the 16th and 17th of September, we'll be hosting a series of live shows. In fact, we'll be live all weekend, encouraging you to stand on your hands and empty your pockets that way, and throw the change our way. So the Reverbathon is there to raise funds for this brilliant community asset that the City of Brighton Hove really does need. They've given us the editorial freedom on the platform to actually, well, do our stuff for the past, what, 16, 17 years. And we're really grateful for them to have done so. And we love the cooperation and support that we get from them. And it's absolutely brilliant. We're not sure which day we're going to be doing ourselves, because, like I said, we're away on the 16th at Man United. And I think probably too many people will be focusing on that. So we'll keep you posted. But if you do feel, you know, that payday is just around the corner, you can always still go to radioreverb.com/donate and you can chuck us a few quid that way. That'll be absolutely brilliant. So 16th, 17th. And the point is that wherever it is we do our live show, come along and blow raspberries at us, because I think we'd really enjoy that.
Can you remember the last one, Al?
I can. It was at the Hope and Ruin, which is the possibility of where we'll be on the Sunday, TBC. But yes, I couldn't tell you for the life of me who our guest was.
It was a certain Andy Bass. Basically, what happened was we just played Wolves away, which is where Alexis McAllister made his debut, actually. And that also turned out to be the last game we played before lockdown.
Okay, well, let's hope that doesn't turn out that way in mid-September as well, a month away. Yeah. But
speaking of the last game that we played, Brian, it was a comprehensive victory for us against Luton, and I don't think we ever really got out of second gear, did we?
I thought at times it looked like we were really going to cut loose Brighton, but sort of just at times. But I suppose at 1-0, you wonder whether Luton could have... And I thought they were really up for it, and their fans were really up for it. At 2-0, the penalty, thought, right, that's it. Nice and straightforward. I don't know if the two penalties are going to be discussed at all.
Yes, but
just to believe, they are, Brian.
I had little memories of Lewis Dunk. Obviously, he'll be discussed, but I'll remember memories of him in front of the cop when Luton player juggles in front of his own goal for the 3-1 Adingra. And after that, I thought it could have been 4. Yeah, 4 was absolutely fine. But then when Newcastle went and scored 5, he thought, it's actually that could have been Brighton. But I don't think it was. It wasn't sort of a landslide sort of thing. There were times when Luton were giving them a decent game.
Yeah, because Al, you said to me straight after the game, and I disagreed with you, that you thought the scoreline flattered us.
I still think that up to about sort of 70, 80 minutes. I think once the third goal went in, 4, 5 and 6 could have easily come on their way. But until then, Luton were decent going forwards. They looked threatening on the break. They didn't park the bus in the way that I thought they would. You know, there was a huge amount of naivety in their game. But they thought, well, you know, it's their first top division game for, you know, for 30 plus years. The story is not 100 million miles from our story, in as much as, you know, the glory years, they turned to donkey's years and they dropped even further. So that, you know, they gave it a go. But as was pointed out by Alan Shearer, they were just sort of woefully naive. Yeah, I didn't realize how many times we'd hit the post. It was three times. And that's how you think, well, okay, yeah, we could have got six, could have got seven, could have got eight. But I also thought that the Luton put up a good fight against us. And it wasn't, we didn't get to play the free flowing game that I thought we would. Like you say, we didn't get our second gear. And, you know, with a game like Luton, and we've got, you know, everyone's embedding three, four debutants, some of whom started a bit sluggishly and got into the game. I don't think anyone was really poor, but, you know, it was like, I think Brian's right. It felt a little bit like a preseason game against a lower division side, who personally I think will struggle. But yeah, 4-1. Yeah. I mean, if we stick the ball in the net four times, then of course we've deserved four goals. But I thought that they were better value than, you know, than a 4-1 drubbing would have, was sounds like.
I wouldn't say a pre-season goal. I'd say more like a cup tie, especially the way the Luton fans were as well, because it was their, I don't like to use that phrase, big day out, but it sort of was there.
Yeah.
But it was weird, like you say, on the pattern of play, you'd think 4-1 flattered Brighton, but equally, they should have scored eight. They should, yeah. eight, seven or eight goals. So it's quite a weird one. And obviously, as always, stayed behind quite late doing work and what have you, and quite a lot of fans stayed late or came back to the stadium because of the train problems. And I saw there was quite a few orange shirts in the North Stand concourse. So I think they quite enjoyed their day or everybody sort of, you know, enjoyed themselves and not too Brighton, obviously pretty pleased. Luton, not too disappointed. Completely different feel to that last time they played each other in the Johnson's Paints Trophy. But yeah enjoyable afternoon.
I also learned that the tea in Luton is silent.
It's more Lou, isn't it?
I think the Brighton one's an apostrophe.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of a brilliant article in, I think it was in The Guardian. It was a long time ago. It was after a Palace game at Selhurst. In fact, I think it might have actually been the one we want to forget. But there was the writer at the time said, "I'm not quite sure who Brian is and why they hate him so much."
Well, we love our Brian.
There was one line Luton fans were singing, and it was, "You'll never sing that, you'll never sing that, you'll never sing that." And when they sang the line, I couldn't tell what they were actually saying.
Champions of the conference.
I know what it was. It was conference champions. That was it. "You'll never sing that."
Okay. So, I probably won't sing it. I don't know what that is, but their captain came out and spoke for quite a while. I wasn't involved in the press huddle around him, but you know, he was saying what an eye-opener it was, what an experience, a learning experience it was for them. So I think it fell nicely, that first game for Brighton, to be honest.
I think they sent the captain out because the manager couldn't talk anymore.
Yeah, I didn't do his press conference either, but I almost wished I had done when I saw him on Match of the Day. But obviously we've been moved around a little bit in the press box. We're a little bit sort of closer together now, and
we love
with
that
the radio. Yeah, that's okay. It's fine. It's a good earner, isn't it? But so I had, you know, they say when there could be sent in a cup upset when the media turn out, and then in hope of a surprise. And I literally had Adrian Durham sat right next to me for TalkSport, and Ian Dennis right in front. I think he's such a good commentator. Unfortunately, I couldn't hear him because he was in front of me for Five Live. And I thought, I wonder if this is, they think this could be the story, you know, Luton. Mm. Why have they come here? The only reason they would come here is the story of Luton coming back and getting a win, but disappointed.
Yeah. Okay, so, Brian, it was obviously De Zerbi's first team of the season, with still starting in goal. But I believe on Friday, in the presser on Friday, that he did actually say that he was going to alternate them, though, with Bruggen.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I heard him say it, but I don't know if that's actually going to be the case. He said that Steele was definitely starting. He said that Verbruggen has got a few details to work on, but he could have started on Saturday. It wouldn't have been a problem. When he said 50-50, I don't see that happening, but obviously it could be that one is in the Europa League and the cup games. But it's a slightly strange quote, yeah, as you say, but Steele starts as the number one, but Verbruggen's clearly been brought in as a long-term reason.
Well, since we've just offloaded a £25 million goalkeeper, then, you know, we've got our choices here. And then third comes Tom McGill, and it'll be interesting to see how, because he seems to be the third choice. He's certainly the sort of like the junior backup. Although when I say junior backup, he's probably not that much younger than Verbruggen, if he is indeed younger. But actually, I mean, with those in mind, I mean, because last week, AD, you were saying that Jason Steele, you know, is he going to start? Well, for me, it's an absolute, you know, sort of walk-in that he's going to start. But Brian, is there any talk about sort of the rise of Tom McGill?
No, not really at all. No. I think
he just seems to be there.
He is there, but remember they've got Rushworth out on loan at Swansea, who seems to have been, yeah, Beadles at Oxford. We had one of our photographers, our freelance photographers, went to take, he offered to take some pictures of me. He was doing Oxford anyway, and he sent some pictures of Beadle, but he said he couldn't get anything of him actually doing anything in whatever game it was. He had a quiet time. I know there was a clip of Rushworth making a sharp save, sort of low down for Swansea, but it looks like he's been involved in a couple of unfortunate incidents in conceding goals. So McGill, you think, is fifth or sixth, but look at the sort of experience he's going to get, and obviously working with the training, with the coaching staff every day as well. I mean, quite often, if people don't go out on loan, it's not just the game experience, or it's because they want those players to be working with Brighton coaches, not with other people's coaches. So I think you're looking at, obviously, the two who are here, and then I'm not sure, Sherpen, I'm not sure, but Rushworth and Beadle. And Rushworth has now done the full thing, hasn't he, in terms of loans, or he would have done at the end of the season and gone League Two, League One, Championship. So
which then that would imply that he's going to stay next season.
That's exactly what Sanchez did. That's exactly what Ben White did, I should say. He went division by division. So I suppose if it comes to decision time, it doesn't mean he then goes into playing the Premier League, but it does become decision time for him.
You could say the same about Christian Morton, though, as well. So,
where's he? Is he still at Ipswich?
I think still at Ipswich, I think.
But yeah, okay, he's doing quite well.
The rest of the team, Brian, I mean, it wasn't too many surprises, I don't think, in the team selection. But obviously, Milner started as right back, which meant Grace was in the midfield. There was perhaps a surprise that Billy Gilmore didn't start, maybe?
Yeah, I thought at the time when I looked at the 11, but then when I ran through it, I thought, well, instead of who? Because Milner obviously didn't need too much game time to get up to speed, and then we saw that he was playing at right back. So, yeah, initially, because Billy Gilmore gets asked about a lot of our press conferences, and De Zerbi always says nice things about him, but the amount of nice things he said isn't really reflected in the amount of starts that Gilmore makes. But I thought when he went on, he did well, actually. But when it went through the 11 in play, who would you... It sort of made sense when you... It's one of those you look at, he's not there and you think he should be playing. But when you actually start to build a team yourself, as the head coach has to do, it sort of makes more sense.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of those things where we're kind of going to be getting used to having Milner available as well as Grace, because those two players, I guess, they're interchangeable, really.
Well, they are basically birds of a feather. I mean, they're not even that far apart in age. And as much as they're versatile, they play anywhere. They never let you down. They are, you know, skillful. I mean, when the team got announced, so many people said, well, that's going to be Gross at right back and Milner in the middle. And I'm thinking, yeah, are you sure? Because, you know, as we know, Gross at right back is a waste of his talent. Milner, if he's in the middle, will have to expend an awful lot more energy and therefore probably not get so much game time. But also, I think that probably he can see a lot more going on around him, Milner, if he's at right back rather than in the middle. And he is a kind of, in that sense, also a follow-up to Adam Lallana, because you noticed he was actually being very vocal, you know, chivying people along. I mean, this is such a good signing, you know, for all the social media stuff over the past 4 or 5 years of James Milner, he's boring, he's this. This is actually, for me, an absolutely brilliant signing. And he's going to be able to make such a difference, in terms of experience. And for the fact he's less of a sick note than Lallana, I think he's probably the person that they've brought in, because you think, well, Adam, are you going to be playing again? But in terms of your Billy Gilmore thing, then I get the feeling that Mahmoud Dahoud is going to be the kind of midfield, central midfield starter of choice.
Yeah.
And he started off for me a little bit sluggishly.
No, I was just going to say there are good players going to be left out of the team, especially when most of them are around now. I mean, look at Ciso, you could say, and Ciso deserves to be playing in that Brighton team when you look at him last season. But then equally, you go through the positions. Well, where? Instead of Matoma, you know, instead of João Pedro, it made sense when you actually went through the practical. And then in the end, you had Nciso coming on, Ferguson coming on, and Adingra. So, and pretty much everybody's available at the moment. Think back to sort of the end of last season when it felt like they were patching the team together, and that situation could arise before too long, actually. You never know.
And even the highly, and for me, he's still ridiculously underrated. You know, Joel Veltman, you know, the specialist right back that we have at the club, who can still play also at centre back. You know, Milner, it's not his first position, and yet he's still got the nod over Veltman. So, yeah, your point is that even for that game on Saturday, we had 1.5 teams that you thought, well, everyone deserved to start. And even then, there was probably others that you realised were could have been in the starting 11.
Is Lamptey injured again?
When you've got Milner who's being chosen and Veltman's being chosen, then Lamptey's going to get sort of put back, isn't he?
I think as well. I mean, obviously, Estupiñán does. We sort of get used to, when you talk about fullbacks, attacking fullbacks, I think traditionally we've meant raiding down the wing like Estupiñán does or Cucurella used to do. But now as well, it means joining in the midfield, joining the build-up play. And that is what having Milner there can help with, or when they had Gross or when they had Caicedo. So it's that different. Maybe it suits the way that De Zerbi plays as well, those overloads. I mean, I looked up at times in the first half and it was literally a line of five, almost like the old, in the 1950s, in attack. And you had Mitoma, Welbeck, João Pedro, Pascal Gross and Marx literally in a line. Anyway, entertaining to watch. AD's got his hand up.
I mean, we've spoken about us earning 115 million quid for a record transfer out, but we also had a record transfer in, and that was João Pedro, who made his full debut for us. Luton fans clearly love him.
Yes. It's interesting that he got grief and Estupiñán didn't. And Welbeck didn't either. Yeah, somewhere down the line, he must have trolled them. He scored his first ever goal in England against them, apparently. Yeah, still a work in progress for me. The link up it was like having two centre forwards. Now, I know that one played up front and one was just behind, but effectively it was two centre forwards. And at the moment, they're not necessarily acting as a partnership. They do seem to be acting as two separate centre-forwards. In the great scheme of things, when you win 4-1, you can't moan too much. However, you know, there will be times when you think, well, the link play has got to be a little bit better. It's got to be a little bit crisper.
Yeah.
And, you know, because then when Ferguson came on, you couldn't help feeling that the link-up play was a little better. That's not to blame Welbeck, and it's not to blame Pedro, but between them, they've got to kind of, I think, sort of step up to the plate between them.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, both Welbeck and Pedro were quite profitable, particularly in the first half. There was that chance early on for Pedro to open his account for us where he just completely, he couldn't get over his feet, I think. And then there was a couple of, Welbeck had a couple of opportunities. And, you know, it's that age-old thing. You want your striker to be selfish, but when there's a better option...
Well, in those instances, they were ones that, you know, should have been taken on by those individuals quite correctly, but they just fluffed their lines.
What, from the throw-in you're talking about for Welbeck? I don't know if he had the pass to João Pedro sort of blocked off. I'm not sure, but I like the way João Pedro just drops into those spaces and little areas which are really hard for opposition to mark, and he sort of glides on the ball and looks up. I'll be glad to see him get... Gosh, it's one game, isn't it? But I'm putting pre-season into this as well. I'll be quite happy to see him get his first open play goal because he's had two or three chances. But then when you think you've got Evan Ferguson, I think he was a little bit delayed in playing with doing his pre-season and getting his friendlies in. But he's going to obviously come on really strong. And that was such a great effort, that curler against the inside of the post. Yeah, but I like the way he slid in to beat Adingra to the touch as well for that goal. I mean, Adingra could have tapped that in. But that's a goal scorer for you as well.
You want your strikers to be selfish, but hang on. But yeah, I mean, it was really wonderful. So obviously, Pedro was fouled for the penalty, which is a little bit soft.
No such thing, remember?
Yeah, I thought it was a foul.
I thought it was. There's no such thing as a soft penalty, AD, remember?
Well, when it comes to that, I should probably mention the fact that Solly March scored the first goal of the season for us. Heading a rare header that actually he actually get his head on, unlike a couple from last season, which
does that
away
boy
from
and I say boy, he still looks like he's only just out of his nappies. Does that boy ever stop frowning?
Well, I think he's taking Mickey out of Lewis Dunk, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've seen him
smile.
Even
when he scored, he just had this scowl on his face as if to say, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's a goal. Yeah.
He's modest. Pascal Gross always looks angry when he scores.
Yes.
I don't know if you've noticed. He I can't remember him looking happy after a goal. He always looks really angry. But yeah, no, it's a good head. It wasn't a good position. I mean, he got into a really good position in that sense, actually, as a centre forward position. And,
yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I thought Luton fans seemed happier at 1-0 than Brighton fans when the halftime whistle went. They all sort of cheered the halftime whistle.
Well, I think so, because, I mean, as the half was going on, you realise, I think, that the De Zerbi needed to get them in and sort of sort them out a little bit. I mean, like I say, maybe there's the level of expectation. We were spoilt last year with, at times, some absolutely scintillating football. We got some of it, you know, on Saturday. But the whole, you know, if you're going to take the season as a whole, I think that there is an expectation that at the very least we should carry it on and maybe even improve on it. And so when you don't get that free-flowing football minute after minute, time after time, where you're just going bang, bang, bang through them like a dose of salts, you know, you get a bit frustrating. I think we've all got to learn a lesson that not every pass, not every trick, not every, you know, sleight of foot is going to come off. But even then, there were times when I think we could have been stronger in the tackle. And I'm looking at you, Mahmoud Dahoud, who grew into the game, but you could see started a bit weakly, a bit sort of dozily, but like I say, grew into it. And there was, you know, it wasn't quite coming together. Yeah. And I think that half time and De Zerbi just sort of settling them down, calming them down, or building them up, or throwing teacups, or making tea, or whatever it is he does to get them sorted. You know, I think it was an improvement in the second half.
Yeah. I mean, there was one move in the first half which basically just had absolutely everyone purring, which was started unusually. I say not unusually at all, but started by Jason Steele and ended up with Danny Welbeck hitting the post. It was just such a
that was beautiful and
stunning bit of play.
But I know we'll talk about the penalty but if you're talking about the style of play, I think that once the third goal had gone in, and that was probably only about 3 or 4 minutes from the end, you saw that, one, Luton looked a bit knackered. Two, their heads dropped. You know, they got back to 2-1, and like I say, that was a howler of a goal to give away. But after that, I mean, there was a time where I could see the Luton forwards, you know, a couple of them just saying, "Now, come on, move up, go in and close them down." And I'm thinking, you do that, you're going to fall into our trap. And then for the last 5, 6, 7 minutes, we were just going through them because they were falling into our trap.
Now, Brian, it was another weekend where our friends up at Stockley Park possibly hadn't covered themselves in glory. There's a few incidents that has had everyone scratching our heads, and that was included one at the Amex, which PG Mulva already admitted actually was a mistake.
Have they?
Yeah,
the referees
yeah,
have, but I didn't realise PG Moll admitted as well.
Yeah, basically, a bit like the one at Old Trafford last night, which somehow managed to cock up.
I haven't looked so much into this because it wasn't so costly as some of those decisions, so, i.e. at Tottenham, which was the same VAR as happened as it was at Old Trafford. But I've sort of lost track now the amount of times where you see things, obviously, with your as they happen, and then we've got the little monitors on our desk, so we see the replays. And I've come to the conclusion a few times where yes, that such and such decision is going to be given, i.e., Matoma's goal is not going to be cancelled out Spurs, or there was one where I think Harry Maguire handled the ball as he scrambled it in at Old Trafford. And the amount of times I've decided, yeah, that decision is going to happen, and then the complete opposite happens. Yeah, this one, I must admit, when I looked at the replay, I thought it had come off Lewis Dunk's back. Obviously, it wasn't, was it? It was the trailing arm.
Yeah.
So I think from what I've read in the ESPN, certainly the ESPN column, the VAR column on there, that it was once the referee had made a certain decision, it was a hard one to overturn, but he probably should have made a different decision in the first place.
So, I mean, this is the thing, Brian, because it, I mean, it's one where if he hadn't given it, the VAR wouldn't have overturned it.
No, no.
And that and that's somewhere, surely the point of having the VAR, if they're going to check it, is have you made a mistake there? Yes, the point, you've made a mistake. It's
the point is,
a penalty.
Is that, I mean, to use a different sports analogy, we're talking about umpire's call here. VAR is there to, I mean, it's the phrase isn't clear and obvious. It's actually a clear error. So, yes, you're right. In that sense, has the referee made a clear error? Well, Dunk, it did hit Dunk's hand, but we've then got to know the rule, the law about, is it ball to hand? Is it, you know, is that accidental? Is it natural? Is it this? Is it that? What is the law? It seems to be, you know, an absolute salad of how the law, not how the law is interpreted, but what is it?
I mean, if you look at Jackson for Chelsea against Liverpool the weekend, he was pretty much playing volleyball. I mean, that was a clear and blatant handball, and yet that wasn't given.
Yeah, but you have to check club badge first, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with a clear error, I sort of struggle with a little bit, because if it's an error, if you can see it, then surely it is clear. If you can't. It's difficult, isn't it? It's quite tricky, but it wasn't really the main talking point from Saturday. But I thought there was a foul on it wasn't a massive foul, so to speak, but it was a foul that on João Pedro. So if you'd been running along down the street to catch a bus and somebody done that to you, you would have probably fallen over.
Yeah,
but it was close, basically.
The handball was it was sort of a debatable one, wasn't it? But when I saw the replay, I thought, no, they won't give that.
Let me put it in these terms. If the referee hadn't given that, it's a rhetorical question, but would VAR have actually said to the referee, you need to go and look at that? I think the answer is...
The Brighton one.
The Brighton one, yeah.
I think there's more chance that would have been looked at.
Yes.
That would have been overturned.
It's not just the fact that Pedro... He didn't go down easily. He was, you know, leaned on. He was bundled. And also, you can throw
in the arm, wasn't
it? It was the arm that I think was the clincher that would actually have said to VAR. Because if the arm wasn't there, VAR might have said, maybe look at it. But that the fact that the arm was up and then kind of pushing him over, that says to me it wasn't accidental. He was actually knowing that he was clattering into Pedro, and that is enough, you know. And like I say, when I say, you know, this thing I always say, there's no such thing as a soft penalty. It either crosses the threshold of a foul or it doesn't.
Well, I mean, I thought that the foul on Pedro when we eventually scored the third goal, that was more of a penalty than the one that's actually given.
Was
in
that
my
not
view,
what
but...
tackle? Do you not mean the in the build up the tackle? I thought it was on Mitoma.
No, it was on Pedro.
No, not on Pedro. I remember the one you mean. Yeah,
it was quite a robust challenge. I actually thought he got the ball.
Yeah, I did. I did, but then I suppose you could go back, and a lot of these things, every time you look at them, you can see different things in the incident. Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't. It was mentioned in the press conference with De Zerbi. He said he didn't see the Dunk one, and he thought it was a penalty. He didn't want to get in any arguments in the first game of the season. It was a penalty on João Pedro, and he didn't see the Dunk one. And we have far more interesting things to talk about, to be honest.
Right, okay. Fair enough. I'll tell you what, for me, AD,
I'm saying this wasn't interesting.
Tell you one thing for me, AD, and I can't help feeling this fella's going to go under the radar a little bit, and yet he's going to contribute mostly, I'm guessing, from the bench. I'm really impressed with Simon Adengra.
Yes, I think he's
still a bit raw.
There's just something about him that makes me smile.
Yeah,
there's footballers that are just joyful to watch, and I think he's going to be one of those.
Well, not that we don't have several of them already, but yeah, there's that kind of impishness about it. I mean, you know, he scored it was a bit opportunist, and it was a sort of an error that was actually laid on his plate, and he's not going to get too many of those this season. I think the rest he's going to have to work a little bit harder for, but the point is, he took it with, quote, aplomb, Where have we heard that before? And it's almost as if he's coming to the team and thought, well, I'm going to have some fun.
Yeah.
And that's what it's even if he's not smiling, it says to me he's playing with a smile on his face.
I think a lot of the players are going to have some fun this year, Brian.
He looks like he's used to scoring goals. Not so much. Well, that one as well. But I'm thinking of the two he got in America.
Yep.
That finish from the long ball by Steele, and also it was sort of overlooked a little bit because they put clips of the pass like it was a quarterback's pass for a running back. But that one, the second one, where he just knew exactly what he was doing and passed it into the far corner, I thought that was a really nice sort of goal scorer's
finish.
It was
a perfectly executed finish. That took some skill to put it in exactly that postage stamp area. But Brian, okay, so one question that we asked the band last week when we were doing our pre-season predictions was, how many goals are we going to score this season? Now, we've already got four. We're four different goal scorers as well, which is nice to see. So, yeah. I mean, we scored 96 goals last season. Can you see us usurping that this year?
I haven't thought about that, but it must be... I mean, they were scoring goals at the start of last season, weren't they? But with the games, you're including Europe in this as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got an extra competition as well. So,
yeah.
Could we hit three figures?
But it won't go to Forest Green, though. So,
that was only three.
That's a great target, isn't it? Yeah, that's not something I've really looked at. But to get four and to, you know, getting four in the Premier League was an event for many years. And now it's almost like, it was only four.
Yeah.
I think there's been, I honestly don't know. I'll have to sit down and think about this. And it obviously we'll see where the European draw is. But it's got to be a target, and it's got to be a possibility. They will let some in as well.
Oh, yes.
That's got to be. And I think a lot of our chat here is when we've gone on to the individual things has maybe made the game sound, we've been a bit serious and it's been maybe a little bit critical. And there are... But generally, it was just such an enjoyable afternoon to watch. And I don't want people to think I was sitting there sort of, oh, that's not quite right. That's not quite right. It was, you know, it was a nice afternoon. The Wi-Fi worked really well. The football was good. There were goals. It was, you know what I mean? So I don't want to, when there are certain things you've asked about, you've had to be a little bit, not negative, but critical in a way.
I wasn't in the press box on Saturday, but there were some, it was teething problems around the stadium and
really?
With the transport issues. So,
well, there certainly was with the trains coming home. Absolutely. I mean, you know, that was, I eventually got into the Evening Star at 7:30, having queued up at 6:10. I think you bailed on the queue, didn't you, AD, and decided
I walked
to town.
I walked back to Brighton.
Yeah. I thought, you know, do you stick or twist? And I ended up getting back for 7:30. You know, which is a reasonable hour, you know, plenty of people still about. But for the most part, I thought, you know, Luton Town fans were great. They came in, supported their team, drank in the beer, they drank in the bars afterwards, kind of realised that even then they got one train home and those were cancelled. But yeah, it was a good start to the campaign, apart from the trains. And unfortunately, because the pair of us come in from Worthing, that is actually still a major part of the whole experience.
Now, Brian, we've got a couple of weeks left on the window. There's lots of rumours about X player coming in, that player going out. There's been lots of stories about Valentin Barco.
Valentin Barco,
coming in. You've done some digging.
Well, I've just checked that it's true that not that he's coming in, but that Brighton are actually interested in him because they get linked. Their sort of reputation for developing young players means that they get linked with a lot of players from, quite a few players from South America. But yeah, there is genuine interest in him. We're doing this on what, Tuesday evening. I've noticed that Manchester City have now been mentioned. I think Juventus have been mentioned. But he sort of fits in, what, about an £8 million release clause, although you're free to offer more than that if you so wish.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to, as we speak now, we're hearing he wants to keep playing in the Copa del Libertadores with Boca. So if that happens, maybe that will go beyond the end of the transfer window, in which case, if Brighton were to bring him in, they might say... no, or they might say yes, stay there till January or whatever. Obviously, I think we've spoken about midfielders. There's some, as I understand it, there won't be any additional major departures, but you've got players like Zakiri, Furlong, one or two others who need to sort themselves out by the end of the window. So there's always bits to do, you know, even if you get your major business done, there's always bits to tie up on the last sort of day or two of the window.
But I mean, we were talking earlier about obviously looking for similar types of players to Caicedo. Now, one player that springs to mind who came back from loan this summer is Steven Alzate. I can just see him fitting into that role.
Yeah, I don't know. Is he?
Not with the
Is
same
it? I mean,
tenacity with which Caicedo plays.
Caicedo's so powerful. I mean, when you see highlight reels of players, it's bits of skill and it's goals and it's near misses and shots against the bar. When you see Caicedo's highlight reel, it's tackle after tackle after tackle. And there's one or two. There was one at Wolves, which I think was given as a foul. And there's one or two where he's come in and made a tackle when the player's bearing down on goal. I don't know who Brighton have got within their existing array of players who can do exactly that. And it might be that they have to slightly change the way they play, but the way that De Zerbi was talking was no, he needs a Caicedo type. So we'll see.
As to who that is anyone's guess. And let's face it, for anyone that we know, you know, and the vast majority of people only know players maybe in the major leagues and maybe in the top division of the major leagues. But let's face it, the Albion scouting network is second to none, and they'll find someone who lives halfway up a mountain in the Andes, who's actually normally a goat herder by day, and pluck him out of obscurity. Out, you know, from 15,000 feet up, and stick him in a left back, and we'll have a, you know, another £100 million player. That's I don't think that's strictly the Albion's business model, but it's not a million miles from it.
Well, they're not obscurity. The thing is, they're stars in their own land. Like Enciso is a massive star in Paraguay, but we didn't know him. Same with well, most of us didn't know him. Same with Caicedo. So they're sort of unknown if you don't know them,
Well, yes.
but they are huge. That they are experienced and they are, you know, top players in their own country. So we shall see. This is by the time this goes out, something might have happened. Who knows?
Absolutely. I mean, I just can't help thinking that with Barco, I haven't seen him. If he does come in and is a replacement left back, he does actually follow a fairly prestigious line of red-headed left backs, doesn't he? I mean, we've got
I feel.
Kerry Mayo springs to mind. We've
Yeah,
got
and
Harry Wilson.
oh, I can't remember him.
Yeah, Eric Potts, Bernie Gallagher.
I think he's not only a left back, he can play left back, but he plays left midfield as well. He's not like a specialist left back. Let's say he would be an exciting player to have at left back. Yeah, we shall see. But yeah, an exciting player, certainly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No,
Where are we at
it's
time-wise now?
if we don't have anything else, I might as well just
Yeah, I need to get going, to be
yeah,
honest.
call
Sorry,
it quits.
even though I'm here late.
I think I might have to just put a long song at the end.
Okay. Well, I mean, there was other stuff, but.
Well, hang on. What else did you have in mind?
But no, Brian's got a shit. I mean, basically, I was just going to ask, okay.
No, hang
So
on.
we.
What was the subject matter?
Wolves.
Nah. Save that for next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll do the outro then. Okay. Well,
I
that
didn't see
is.
them last night. Yeah.
You were
Go
sorry.
on. I didn't see Wolves last night. I wouldn't really know what to say about
No, quite.
it. Yeah. Apart from the dodgy penalty. Okay, well,
Yeah.
that is all we have time for this week. So thank you so much to Brian Owen. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.
Should have been there, he said he was on the way. I thought if he don't hurry up, he'll miss me on a day. Finally he turned up and I told him what I thought. Then to my surprise he said, Sonic, you can walk. I had to show a bit of leg, cause time was running out. And a geezer stopped and said, oh, I can take you out to
absolute air.